All right, so now we're going to slog through many of the detailed characteristics of options and take a look at what are called option strategies. But first, did you go over the first presentation at least once more, twice more, maybe even three times more? Because you have to understand what we learned in the previous session before this stuff actually starts to make sense. Good. Oh, good. Okay. Slide number 17. The strike price. The exercise price. So you might want to write these down because we use these terms over and over again. And this is the contract price between the buyer of the option and the seller of the option. It's the stated price at which you can buy the security with a call option or sell the security with a put option. So we were using... We were using $20, but they're all over, you know, depending on the price of the security. Traditionally, they would go in $2.50 increments up to $25, and then $5 increments between $25 and $200, and $10 increments above $200, but now the pricing is much more flexible. You'll see $2.50 increments much higher than $25 and $5 increments higher than $200, so you have to watch for those. Slide number 18, the expiration date, the date at which the option expires. Now, this is something that is just true about all options. The expiration date is always the third Friday of the month of the options expiration. So if you say you're going to buy some May options, they're going to expire the third Friday of that of May. And the hour before the close of the market on the third Friday is sometimes called the witching hour. Why? Because that's when all these things get the ones that are make sense to be exercised, that's when these things get exercised. So the market sometimes does some really strange things when all these positions become unwound. As well as stock options, there are also stock index options and stock index futures that we'll discuss later. When all three, stock options, stock index options, and stock futures expire on the same Friday, it is called the triple witching hour, and it can be those days when at the very end the market just does really strange things and you're wondering what's going on, and it has to do with these expirations. Slide number 19, exercise style. Now the book goes into detail about the two common forms, the American options, which can be exercised at any time before the expiration, and the European options, which can only be exercised on the expiration date. I'm not going to hold you to all the discussion that is done in Chapter 15 about that. Normally, if you wanted to take a profit from an option that had done well, and there was still significant time until the expiration date, you would simply resell the option. Just turn around and sell the option to somebody else instead of actually exercising the option. Unless you really did want the stock. I mean, you bought a call option and you really did want that company and the stock has zoomed up and so you can now buy it at a much more favorable price. But often people, especially traders, will just turn around and sell the option to somebody else. However, with an American-style option, if you really wanted the stock, you could exercise the option and buy or sell the stock before the expiration date. The European, you'd have to wait until the expiration date. By the way, there are several other types of options with various provisions, and feel free to go look at all the different types of options out there, Jamaican options, and if it rings your chimes, so to speak, please enjoy the various provisions and various types and names of options exercise styles. Okay, so let's continue. Slide number 20. Quotations of listed options. Well, in the commentary for the assignment, and in there's an ancillary presentation that shows you how to use Yahoo to look up options quotes. But of course, you could use any service that you're interested in. There are three, four different ways of getting there. Really, if you're looking at a company, you're looking at a specific company, you've typed in the symbol, there's a link on the left-hand side that just says options. All right? That's a piece of cake. And what you're going to see is not one option. You're going to see an entire chain of options, and that, several listed prices for different strike prices. And that is called the option chain. So you take a look at the little auxiliary presentation about using Yahoo, or if you want to use Bloomberg or whoever, go right ahead. And the assignment is to look up a few options. You can track them for an entire week. I wanted you to look at them one day, and then 1 week later come back and take a look at them. But you could look at them every day and see how much they move. It's pretty amazing. So, one day you make 100%, the next day you lose it all. Ooh, pretty amazing. Slide number 21, options contracts. Now remember, these are contracts, folks. They're not assets. They point to another asset. They derive their value from other assets. So whether you're buying or selling, another word for that is writing, another word for that is making the options, we have discussed them as if they were traded just as stocks are traded. Well, in most ways they are very similar, but there is one major difference that we have not discussed. Options are sold as contracts. Each contract represents 100 shares of an underlying security. So there are no odd lots. You don't buy an option for 17 shares or 175 shares. You buy options in 100 share increments. So everything we've done in everything we did in the first presentation, we talked about a dollar. You have to multiply that by 100 for one contract. And of course, if you did two contracts, you'd multiply it by 200. So at the bottom of slide 21, we see if the listed price of the option is $5, then one contract will cost us $500. You understand? Plus the commission, plus whatever commission it is. Two contracts would cost us $1,000. And remember, who gets the money? The seller of the option, the person on the other side. The buyer pays the $5 times 100, or a dollar times 100, or 20 cents times 100. And the buyer pays that. I said that. The seller receives that money, and they get to keep it no matter what happens. So remember that. Options are sold in 100 share contracts. Slide number 22, the option premium. Well, this is the technical term for the price of the option. We've just been using the price of the option. But remember, don't confuse that with the strike price or the exercise price. That's the price of the underlying security. Is it confusing enough for you? The option premium is the quoted price the option buyer pays to buy a listed put or call option. And the seller, the writer, the maker, receives the premium and immediately and gets to keep it whether or not the option is ever exercised. Did I mention that most options expire without being exercised? That most options expire worthless? I think I've mentioned that. I hope I'll mention it again. To make it more confusing, folks, the term premium is also used in a more precise manner when valuing options. So for this reason, most people always refer to the price of the option instead of the premium of the option. So be it. Slide 23. Now, valuations of options. Sometimes called moneyness which I don't know if is a, I don't know, maybe that's in the dictionary, I don't know. Is your option in the money, or is your option out of the money? I don't know. Well, yes, I do. I had to learn it for the Series 7. If you're going to take the Series 7, you're going to have to learn it too. An in-the-money call option is a call option with a strike price that is less than the market price of the security. A out-of-the-money call option is a call option with no real value because the strike price exceeds the market price of the stock. So let's take a look at the first example. This little graph should make sense. The strike price, the exercise price, is $50. If the market price is currently $54, our option is $4 in the money. Does that make sense? We can buy something that is currently selling for $54. We can buy it for $50, so our option is in the money. It makes sense for us to exercise the option. If we're interested in the stock. If we're not, we just turn around and sell the option to somebody else. But what if the market price were below $50? Right, we would be out of the money. Cute, you like that term? Out of the money? And that means if the market price was $47, for example, we would be $3 out of the money. You got it? In the money. The market price is higher than the strike price, the exercise price. Out of the money, the strike price is above the current market price, or the market price is below. Now, you know what's going to happen, right? Right. It's going to be reversed with a put, because everything is exactly the opposite. So, slide 24, an in-the-money put option is a put option with a strike price that is greater than the market price of the underlying security. And vice versa. The out-of-money, the option, put option, the out-of-the-money put option is a put option with no real value because the market price exceeds the strike price. So hopefully the graphs will make sense. They're basically mirror images of one another. If you can put this stock for $50 to somebody, you're the person who bought the put option, and the market price for $46, what a deal. I can sell something for $50 that is currently priced at $46. So my option would be $4 in the money. Of course, if the market price is higher than the exercise price, well, then it doesn't make sense for me to sell something for $50 that somebody else will pay $52 for. So my option would be $2 out of the money. Okay, you got to understand this. Well, actually, you don't, especially if you have no intention of ever buying and trading options. But if you take the Series 7, yes, you do have to understand this. Now, slide 25. This is a theoretical graph that tries to show you what happens with a call option as the price of the stock goes above the strike price. So essentially, the option is worth nothing if the market price is less than the exercise price, less than the strike price. Remember, they mean the same thing. But once the market price gets above the strike price, in this case, the strike price is $50, then the buyer of the option is now making money, and of course, the more the market price goes up, the more money they make. And the seller of the option is losing money. And the higher the market price goes, the more the seller loses. Theoretically, for every dollar above the strike price, the call buyer earns a dollar, and the call seller, the call writer, the call maker, loses a dollar. Does that help with the in-the-money type of understanding? But this is a theoretical example. Let's take a look at slide 26. Remember, the option had a price, technically called the option premium. Let's say the option was selling for $10. Well, right off the bat, right from the beginning, the call buyer is out $10. So So if the option never gets exercised, the call buyer has lost $10 and the call seller has made $10. So right from the beginning, the call buyer is down the price, the option premium, the price of the option, and the call seller is up that amount. So once we go over the strike price, then the call buyer starts to recover some of their losses, and the call writer starts to have that amount reduced, how much they gained, until finally you get to what's called the break-even point. The break-even point is the price of the option added to the strike price in the call option. What's going to happen when we get to, you understand, it's going to reverse itself when we get to the put. So the previous graph ignored the price of the option. But let's say the option was priced at $10. The call buyer had to pay $10. The call seller received $10. So if you're the buyer, you have to have the price of the security go over the strike price by the price of the option. And that's called your break-even point. And once you've hit the break-even point, now the call buyer starts to make money on the transaction, and the call seller starts to lose money. Okay, so make sure you understand those two graphs, because what's going to happen when you know exactly what's going to happen. It's in reverse. Slide 27. You put up the mirror, and everything works exactly the same, but in reverse. Theoretically, again, in a put option, once you go below the exercise price or the strike price, now the buyer of the put starts to make money, and the seller, the writer, the maker, starts to lose money. If the market price is above the strike price, then it's worthless, because it doesn't make any sense for you to sell something at a lower price than the market is currently offering. It that doesn't make any sense. So theoretically, again, for every $1 below the strike price, the put buyer earns a dollar, and the put seller, the put writer, the put maker loses a dollar. But wait, slide 28, right, exactly. We had to buy the option. If we were the buyer, we had to buy the put. If we're the seller, we sold the put. So right from the beginning, the seller, no matter what, earns that. In this case, they use $10. We use $10 as, options usually sell for less, but some of them sell for that much. Some of them sell for more. And so right from the beginning, the option writer, the option seller, the option maker has made $10 on this transaction. And the buyer is below, is down $10. As the price goes below the exercise price, the strike price, as the market price goes below that, then the buyer actually starts to recoup his or her price that they had to pay, the option premium, and the seller starts having that amount reduced until finally they hit the break-even point. And in this case, if the option premium, the option price were $10, the strike price were $50, the break-even point would be $40. So that previous graph was theoretical. It ignored the fact that the put buyer had to pay $10 for the option, and the put seller, the put writer, the put maker earned $10. So go back over and look at these graphs again, and hopefully they will click with you. Slide 29, the time premium. Remember we used the word premium for the option premium? Well, we also used the word premium for the time. This is the amount by which the option exceeds the option's in-the-money value. In other words, how much longer do we have until the option expires? Well, whatever amount the option is worth over the in-the-money value, that's called the time premium, because time is money. And of course, if the option is out of the money, then all the price of the option, the entire price of the option, is due to the time premium. In other words, an option that is in the money will normally sell for more than it is than the amount it is in the money, because of the time remaining until the option expiration date. an option that is out of the money still has more time because, who knows, the underlying stock price may change. And so what you're going to see when you look at these options chains on the internet or however you look at them, you're going to see is as you move out from May to July to September to October to next, you know, January, you will see the time premium increase because there's more time for the option to track the underlying security. Make sense? Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Slide number 30. Commission. Well, of course. Oh, wow. Commissions on options contracts. That's hard to say, huh? Do not forget commissions. In the previous examples, we did not include the cost of the commissions. Yes, your broker is still there. A commission is charged whenever an option is bought or sold, and who pay? Right, both the buyer and the seller can pay a commission, and the commission is charged when and if the buyer exercises the option and buys and sells the stock, and again, both the buyer and the seller pay a commission. And if you turn around and sell the option before it's exercised, you pay a commission. When you include the commissions, it makes it that much harder to make money in options. But if you're a broker, you would simply love to have your clients get hooked on options. Because it's like Vegas, right? They start gambling. Postscript, disclaimer, adviso, none of my clients trade options. I don't trade options. I would do my best to talk them out of it if they ask to. But of course, it's their money. If they want to do it, good luck is all I can say. Slide number 31. Options strategies. Speculating. It's not investing. You will often hear, if you feel the market price of a particular stock is going to move up, if you anticipate a drop in price within the next 6 months, it is a highly risky strategy. I noticed I crossed out the term, the word investment. But it may be suited for the more speculatively inclined. And these are quotes from the one of the editions of the book. The flaw in these arguments is this. There has never been a successful method to predict stock prices in the short term. You may feel or anticipate that the price will go up or down, but that doesn't mean it will. It is not investing, it is gambling. Pure and simple, there's no other way to describe it. All right, there's a way you can use options for insurance, and we'll show you that in just a bit. Plus, you may be correct, folks, about your hunch or your speculation, but your option may expire before you are proven correct. And then, right. Slide number 32, hedging. All right, here we go. I just told you that there may be a reason why you can use options that is not gambling. And here it is. It's called hedging. And we're going to come back to this idea of hedging later on when we get to futures, because then it really does make sense. But here, slide number 32. Hedging is a transaction or a series of transactions made to reduce the risk of adverse price movements in an asset. You could think of hedging as insurance. And although insurance can be useful in some circumstances, it ain't free. You pay for the insurance via the price of the option and, of course, the commissions. Investors can use hedging strategies when they are unsure of what the market will do. A perfect hedge reduces your risk to nothing, except, of course, the cost of the option and the commissions. So let's take a look at an example. Slide number 33. You own 100 shares of Butterfly.com, and it's currently selling for $50, and you bought it, you know, 3 months ago for $10, and it zoomed up to $50, and now you're afraid the price will plummet within the next 3 months to $10. So what can you do? Well, of course, you could just sell the stock, right? And that's what I would suggest you do. But no, you're not quite sure. You purchase a put at $50. Now, you see what you just did? No matter what happens, you can sell the stock for $50. If the price plummets down to 10 bucks, you can still sell your stock for 50 bucks. But only till the option expires, and then what do you have to do? You got to go out and buy more insurance. This is called a protective put, because I'm protecting myself against the price falling. If the price rises, well, my put expires, and I could sell for more than the put. But if the price plummets, I am protected and can sell my 100 shares or 200 shares. Remember, they're in 100 share increments. For that $50 strike price. But, as it says at the bottom of slide 33, insurance is not free. Using options as insurance is one way to keep your broker very, very happy. If you are sure the stock will fall, why not just sell the darn thing, right? Well, you know, then there are taxes, and I'm not sure, so I want to buy insurance. Well, that's your money. Slide number 34. A straddle? What are we talking about? Horses here? No. These are called combinations. You mix and match. You know, buy options, sell options at the same time, buy two options. It makes your broker really love you. The straddle is a simultaneous purchase or sale, depending on which side of the transaction you're on, of a put and a call on the same underlying financial asset. What? Why would you want to do that? You're bullish and bearish at the same time? Yeah, that's basically what you are. You're assuming that this stock price is very volatile and is going to go up in either direction. Well, of course it will, unless you are unfortunate enough to have the price at the exercise date hit exactly your strike price. If the price is volatile in either direction, up or down, you will make money, providing you pass the break-even point for both purchases plus the commissions. If the stock price is not volatile, of course, you could sell, also known as writing, also known as making the straddle, and hope that the price does not change greatly. Oh boy, two commissions at the same time, your broker is really going to love you. Slide number 35. Here's an example. The same butterfly.com, and it's very volatile. It's selling for 50 bucks, and you decide you're going to purchase a call at $50 and purchase a put at $50. So the price of the call is $4, and the price of the put option is $5. Remember, you have to multiply by 100, so the call is going to cost you $400 plus whatever the commission is, and the put option is going to cost you $5. Now, no matter which way the price goes, one of your options will be in the money, unless you're unfortunate enough, as I said, for the price to hit $50 on the day it expires. But the call cost you $4 times 100, and the put cost you $5 times 100, so the price has to move at least $9 either way before you break even. And we did not even include the cost of the commissions. You paid two commissions for the straddle and possibly one more for exercising the option. Brilliant strategy, huh? Wait, it gets better. Spreads. The simultaneous purchase and or sale of two or more options with different strike prices and or expiration dates. Huh? Yeah, it's another combination. The stock is selling for 50 bucks. You buy a call at the strike price of $50. You sell a call at the strike price of 55. You paid for the call at 50. You got paid for the call at 55. If the stock price rises, you make money, but not a whole lot. The possibilities are endless, and so are the commissions. And if you don't understand what I just said, good. Yeah, you get the feeling my blood pressure is starting to rise. you kind of know when these things were really starting to be rolled out that the brokerage firms were looking at the casinos and saying, hey, we've got to get in on this action. These people are spending their entire paycheck on these one-armed bandits and rolling the dice in the roulette wheel. We've got to come up with... No, nobody would do that. Slide number 37. Now, we have been taught, well, we've discussed both sides of the contract, but we've been mostly talking about buying options, if you're the option buyer. But remember, there's somebody else on the other side of the contract, and that's the seller. Selling options, writing options, making options. Selling of the options allows you, the individual investor, to play the part of the casino. You become the Las Vegas casino, and the option buyers are betting against you. And more often than not, the option writer is right, because most options expire worthless. Have I mentioned this yet? I think I have. No matter what happens, the option seller gets the buyer's premium, the price of the option. No matter what happens, you're guaranteed that money goes in your pocket if you're the seller, the maker, the writer. If and when I ever begin trading options, which probably will never happen, it will be as an option writer, because I'm very happy to have people buy something from me that expires worthless. But that doesn't mean you can still not lose big if you're the option writer. Right, the price can go against you in a big way, and you can lose a lot of money. So you think I'm doing it? No, I don't think I'm ever going to do it, but we'll see. You never say never. Slide 38. There are two option strategies for selling options that I would consider. One is called a covered call, and the other one is called a naked put. And covered options are options that are written against stock owned or sold short. Later, we'll discuss that later. And so you're covered, essentially. And we'll take a look at the examples. Naked options, or sometimes called uncovered options, but of course naked is much more sexy. These are options written on securities not owned or not sold short by the writer. And the return, the amount of return to the option writer is always limited to the amount of option premium received, the option price. But the loss can be substantial, even unlimited in the case of a naked call or what's called an uncovered call. So let's take a look at some of these and see if these pique your interest. Because, slide number 39, a covered call. Covered call. You own a stock. You have 100 shares of a stock, and you're considering selling. You know, you're not really sure. You write a covered call, and you receive the premium. Okay, so you get some money in your pocket. If the stock price jumps substantially, the stock will be called away from you. You'll be forced to sell it. But great, you've got the stock you were thinking of selling it anyway. If the stock price stays the same or goes down, the option will expire worthless. And then you can write another covered call. And in either case, you get to keep the premium. Now, this strategy is only one of the two option strategies that personally I would ever consider. And by the way, this is the only options transaction that you're allowed to make in an IRA, in a retirement account. So you think that, yeah, right, the Congress is saying options are too damn risky for people's retirement accounts. But a covered call is not that risky, because you were thinking of selling the darn thing anyway. You own it, so your loss is not unlimited. So let's take a look at an example. You own that butterfly.com. You remember them, right? And it's currently selling for $50. And you bought it at, say, $40, and you're thinking you want to sell. You're not sure. So you write a covered call at $55, and maybe you receive $500, since the premium for a $55 call is currently $5. Remember, multiply times 100. So you get $500 in your pocket. Now, if the stock price jumps over 55, it will be called away from you. But you were thinking of selling anyway, right? And it is if you actually sold it for $60 because you got $5 from the price of the option. You understand? Yeah. So if the stock price jumps high, you're going to sell it for Now, what if it jumps? You're going to sell it for basically $55, but you get the extra $5, so you're selling it for essentially $60. But what if it stays below $55? Well, you can write another covered call, right? You don't have to sell it. This strategy allows you to make extra money from a stock that you already own. Now, do you see any disadvantages? Well, of course. You're thinking of selling it because you're afraid it's going to go down, but you're hanging on to it because maybe it goes over 55. Well, what if it plummets? Well, then, oh well, you could sell it as it's falling because it's probably not going to come back and go over 55. And you don't have to worry about the option being exercised. And what if it jumps to 100? Oh well, you have to sell it at 55. But you were thinking of selling it anyway. So you see, a covered call is a way to get involved with options without being really at risk. Because if you had written a naked call or an uncovered call and the stock zoomed up to 100, now you got to go out and buy the stock at $100 and sell it to somebody at 55. Yeah, so you see how the covered call is a lot less riskier in terms of what could potentially go wrong. Now the other one, slide 41, is a naked put. You are considering purchasing a stock and you have the cash to make the transaction. So in this case, they call it a naked put, but it's not a naked put because you have the cash. So you're covered by the cash. To write a covered put, you really have to have sold the stock short, and we're not going to discuss selling short until we get to a couple more chapters. So you have the cash, so you've covered yourself. You write a naked put, you receive the premium, because remember, you're the option writer, the option seller, the option maker. If the stock price falls substantially, the stock will be put to you. You're going to have to purchase it, but you have the cash in hand. If the stock price stays the same or goes up, the option will expire worthless, and then you can write another naked put. In either case, you get to keep the premium. And, dear students, this is the only other option strategy that I would personally consider. And, unfortunately, in my humble opinion, it is not allowed in an IRA. I think it should be. If you have the cash but if you have the cash in the account and you're able to make the transaction, then you're really not uncovered. You're really not naked. So I think the Congress could allow this. If they're going to allow covered calls, they should allow naked puts with enough cash to make the transaction. But that's, you know, take that and $5 and you can get a cup of coffee. That's an old saying. Some of you young folks probably haven't heard it. Slide number 42. Here's the naked put example. You are considering purchasing Butterfly.com. It's currently selling for $50 and you have the cash. That's the part that covers you. So you write a naked put at 45 and you receive, say, $300 premium since the cost of a $45 put is currently $3. Actually, it'd probably be about $5 if it's selling for $50. But let's say it's $3. If the stock price falls below $45, the stock will be put to you at $45. It is as if you bought it at $42. Did I say it'd be $5? No, actually, because that would be out of the money. I'm getting confused here. So let's say the current price is $35, right? Yeah, because it would be out of the money. I apologize. So let's say it's selling for $3. If the stock price falls below $45, the stock will be put to you at $45. But remember, you received the $3 from selling the put. So it is if you bought the stock at $42, because you had to buy it at $45, but you received $3 from the sale of the put. So if the stock price stays the same or goes up, you can write another naked put. You understand? Maybe you don't. Let's go back over it and do it again. You're thinking of buying it. It's currently selling for $50. You have enough cash to buy it. You go out and see that puts for $45 are currently selling at $3. So you receive $300 from the sale of one contract because you multiply everything by 100. If the stock price falls below $45, the stock will be put to you at $45. Of course, you agreed to buy it at $45. But you receive $3 per share from the sale of the contract. So it's essentially you got the stock at $45. Now, this allows you to make extra money from a stock that you plan or want to purchase. Now, what are the disadvantages? If it plummets down to $5 or $10, oh well, you have to go out there. You've got to sell it. You got to buy it from this guy at $45. So yeah, and he gets to buy it at $3 or $5 if that's, you know, that he exercises the option. What if the stock starts going up? You've lost out on the purchase. You could still buy it, and it's not likely that your option is going to be exercised, but you might not buy the stock. You might wind up saying, oh, well, I missed out on the stock. I was going to buy it at 50, and now it's up to 80, so I'm not going to buy it. So none of these are without their disadvantages, but as you hopefully saw, the covered call, where you own the stock, and the naked put, where you have the money to make the transaction, are two relatively not as risky as other options transactions. So go back over this again and then do it again, and you will be an options expert. Does that mean you should buy and sell the darn things? I don't think so, but then it ain't my money. Next time, folks, we will take a look at employee stock options, which are very popular these days, not as much as they were in the late 1990s, but they're still something that you, as an employee, may be offered, and so you need to understand them, and then we'll end with a few odds and ends and final comments. So see you next time when we discuss employee stock options.